This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning, and wait, is that a familiar face I see on the other side of the studio?
On the other side of a piece of plexiglass.
Yes. No, hey, Charlie Dobbin, hi.
Hey, Frankie, good to see you in real life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not just voice.
Glancing out the window here from our studios in Liberty Village, the Zoomerplex, we see it's a beautiful morning.
Gorgeous.
Slightly on the chilly side, but as you were pointing out as we sat down to test our microphones, this is the last weekend of the summer, really.
That's right. And look, crisp and clear and blue and, nice. Very much of a chill in the air.
Okay.
However, honestly, if it was up to me, it'd be raining right now.
Oh yeah, you need it for your grass seed.
I sure do.
Yeah, out there. Maybe we'll
talk a bit more about that in a minute.
A little bit later. Let me go over some of the rules here that we have to kind of follow along here since we're going live to the phones.
First time in 6 months.
I know. So here's the number that folks, I want you to jot down. And when you have a moment to give us a call, that would be terrific. You can reach Charlie Dobbin here at Zoomer Radio by calling 1-866-740-4740, okay? And, if you happen to be a first-time caller, let us know, please, and Carlos will be passing that along to us, and...
The bell! We haven't
first
heard that
in 6 months. That have been
in
used.
Months,
yeah.
Exactly. We owe a bunch of people bells from all those first-time emailers.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you had a busy day yesterday. You were at Durham College?
Yeah, I'm back, it appears, to my similar routine I had last autumn. So Friday is a busy day, though it's interesting. Yesterday morning, 8 a.m., I conducted a virtual lecture with my students for 3 hours. We did take a little 15-minute break halfway, but in my 15-minute break, not only did I grab a piece of toast, but I went out and argued with the guys who are starting to pave my driveway.
So,
In and out. Anyway, finished that lecture, threw my toothbrush in a bag, and headed off to the college to have an in-person lab with the first-year students. And they're a pretty fun group. We did some transplanting of herbs out of the garden. And one of them looks at me and she goes, you know, this is my funnest class so far.
My funnest class.
And I thought, well, I could like slap her for bad grammar, or I could just be, you know, enjoy the compliment. So I decided to just enjoy the compliment.
That drives me crazy.
I know.
When people do that.
That's what my dad was saying last night. Cause of course I saw my dad last night. He's going, these broadcasters on TV, their grammar is so poor. And he's going on and on how people use words wrong. And so I told him that story.
Fun always requires a modifier. Mm. I had so much fun. Thank you very much. Well, anyway, enough about that. Mm-hmm. You went to dinner with your dad. Where'd you take him?
Well, we went to a place in North York called Paisano's. It's an Italian restaurant that he has been to in the past, so have I. It was just nice. It's nice to go someplace fairly simple. And what's great is, you know, my dad's a big guy and he's got a big walker. And, you know, with all the social distancing in the restaurants, it's great because there's room for him and his walker. And there's not as many people, so it's not as loud. Yeah, so it's great. We did have fun.
Okay, just a wee reminder, we're going to take a break here shortly. Then we're going to go to the phone lines because folks are calling in, but we have reserved a little bit of time on the show a little bit later on in one of the segments to answer some of your emails. That's proved to be a very popular feature and one that I think Charlie kind of appreciates because folks send her, you know, photographs and stuff like that and give you a chance to do a little homework as opposed to right off the top of your noggin. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, let's do a little break here and a reminder that you indeed are listening to The Garden Show starring Charlie Dobbin. I'm Frank Proctor and we'll return in moments here on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, here we go. The lines have been lighting up, and we appreciate that very much. First of all, a big hello to John in Mississauga. Hiya, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, John.
I've tried to email, but I'm not good at that stuff. I did a couple times, as you know. But anyhow, go back to this, to the question. Charlie, I was very busy this summer. I built my son, a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not a garden, but anyhow, a retaining wall, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, like a raised
garden. And I put shrubs, and I put a lot of perennials.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of perennials.
Mm-hmm.
It's brand new soil, brand new triple mix. I don't know whether we overwater them. I don't know whether we over-fertilize them. I need your opinion, please, Charlie.
All right. Just rule of thumb. Brand new garden, brand new triple mix, quality soil, quality plants, no fertilizer the first year.
Oh, shucks.
Okay, so just everybody listen to that and write that down. Put that in needlepoint up on the wall if necessary. Because remember, you know, the plants come with a certain amount of quality soil and a bit of a slow release fertilizer, usually right in the pot. Then your triple mix, if it's good quality, it's full of all kinds of nutrients. So let the plants settle in at their own pace. Don't try and push growth on plants when they aren't ready for it. Now, John, you know this was a crazy summer. Hot, dry,
hot, dry.
And raised garden beds can be more difficult to keep moist because they're not only losing moisture by evaporation from the surface of the soil, but also from the sides of the planters. So whether it's a raised garden or even just a big container on a balcony, there's a lot of opportunity for loss of moisture. So it is a bit hard to overwater, but it is possible. You know, we try not to water anything every day. And just make sure that you've chosen plants that are, you know, plants that love the sun for sunny spots, plants that can cope with some shade for the shadier spots, and recognize that not all plants need the same amount of water. So it's a bit about you just water specifically the water-loving plants, like, say, hydrangea. Hydrangea loves water.
Sorry, Charlie, if I interrupt you, please. There's two hydrangeas. They're not dead.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not alive either. And one thing that I lost, which is expensive, to be honest with you, it's a golden cedar.
Oh.
Mm.
And it's dead. It's complete dead.
Okay, so you'd be taking that back because hopefully you have a guarantee on it.
Yes, I do have a guarantee, yes. It's demoralizing because, like I said, I spent all summer, put 120 feet of retaining wall, new soil, blah, blah, blah. And now, next spring, obviously, we have to... because the guy at the nursery, Charlie, told me, you know, he gave me, he said, this is special, special stuff for what we bought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what? So he gave you like a transplanter fertilizer, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. So you followed the directions on that and
I used it
as per directions. Okay, that's fine. That I won't hit you or slap you for. It's okay when you're first planting to use a transplanter fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. Just beware of like the all-purpose or the miracle grows. None of that the first year.
No, I hardly use that stuff, Charlie, to be honest with you.
Okay, and then one more question, John. When you pulled like the cedar, when you were planting this beautiful, expensive golden cedar, you pulled it out of the pot. What did it look like? Was it just a mass of roots or was there much in the way of roots in that root ball?
Well, there was roots, but the instruction tells you, Charlie, to loosen the roots.
Yes,
it was like a hard ball, right? I couldn't sort of.
So that's.
I was scared that I distorted because, like I said, it's expensive.
Okay, so here's a tip.
Okay.
When you pull a cedar or any plant out of a pot, and it's a mass of really tightly wound, very difficult to loosen roots, that's when you get out your butcher knife and you start slicing through those roots, making an X, the letter X, on the outside of the root ball, all the way around, penetrating into the root ball by about a half an inch, even up to 3/4 inch, depending on the size of the root ball. Then you loosen. Of course, you've hurt, damaged, cut some roots. It's okay. Get that into your hole, plant at the right level, soil around, firm the soil, water thoroughly, and your transplanter fertilizer will encourage new roots to grow out of that ball shape that they're in, the pot size, because they're stuck in that pot shape, right? You want to get them out of that pot shape, and just know that makes a big difference as well. Stimulating the root growth out into that brand new, beautiful triple mix might have made a difference.
Okay, John. Hey, good to hear from you again, John.
Oh, it's good here,
thanks for giving us a ring.
Thank you.
All right.
And thanks very much.
Our pleasure. Nice to hear from you.
Have a great weekend. And here on the Garden Show, we go to Sharon, just around the corner, maybe, here in Toronto. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank. And I am so glad to hear you back on the radio.
Thank you.
So glad. I've been I don't have a computer, so I couldn't get through to you otherwise.
Right. Okay.
What I'm calling for is about seeds, collecting seeds and that too for the winter, and how to hold them over. I've heard you say about putting them in little paper packages and whatever, and putting them in the freezer. This is mostly about a hibiscus.
Okay, what kind of hibiscus? A tropical hibiscus? Or?
Well, I don't know. It comes up every year, and it's just loaded.
Okay, and it's got the big, huge flower?
I don't know what color. I don't know what you call it.
Okay, but it's about a foot and a half tall with big, huge flowers? Or is it a shrub? Did I just lose
you? Did we just lose? Oh, golly. Sharon, did we just lose you there?
There are kinds of hibiscus.
Yeah.
We lost her. Okay, so Sharon, if it's a shrub, a hibiscus shrub is commonly called Rose of Sharon.
Right.
Rose of Sharon shrubs, very, very common, will not typically grow easily from seed, but I could look it up for you if you like. Depends whether it's a single-flowered variety or double-flowered variety. There's a lot of reasons why the Rose of Sharon, because they're cultivars and hybridized seeds don't breed true, we say. Now, the perennial hibiscus, which grows up from the ground, overwinters underground, comes up, and they're blooming now. I don't know if you've seen any, Frank, but the flowers are head-sized. Yeah, they're just huge. They are very gorgeous as well. So maybe you could call back and just clarify which hibiscus you're talking about. And then there's the tropical hibiscus, which is the one we bring inside for the winter. So which hibiscus are we talking about? And I'm happy to discuss or share with you best things to do. But it is the time for seed storing, seed saving now. So we are monitoring our gardens, looking at what's going to seed, watching for dry weather, and being prepared with our little paper envelopes to knock seeds into the envelopes, being very careful to label the envelopes in terms of what we just put in there, and then putting them away for the winter in a cool, dry, dark location. Doesn't have to be the freezer necessarily. It depends on what kind of seeds.
Right. And I see one of the callers waiting for us is our old friend Werner from Tilsonburg. We're going to take a little bit of a break, come back, talk to Werner, but then go to some emails that we've got.
We got a lot of catching up to do, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Frank,
you know,
people have loved and sent many emails.
Exactly. So, Werner, you hold tight there, my friend. We'll be along to you very shortly here on the Garden Show. By the way, the phone number, if you'd like to reach out to Charlie for your question, is 1-866-740-4740. We'll be back in just a moment.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got the Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's head a little bit, let's see, west from Toronto all the way to Tilsonburg, Ontario. And there is Werner on the line. Good morning, Werner.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. You're both looking chipper. What kind of pills are you on?
Lots of good sunshine.
That's right.
How's things in your garden?
Good. I just wanted to know, why the tomatoes take so long to turn red? They're staying green forever.
I hear you. I think, and I hope there was no frost at my house last night.
No.
I must have 150 green tomatoes
now.
Eh? Oh, yeah. I think it's the leaves. I started taking leaves off about a month ago. Not too many, but just slowly exposing the tomatoes to the sun, which will speed up that turning red that we need so badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's something that I thought, well, it's time. You know, who knows when a frost is going to happen. So, like I say, fingers crossed, I still have green tomatoes to work on back at my place. Mm. It was a good year.
I'm so glad to see you guys on, because I'm not that good with that tablet.
It's okay. We're back for all the people that love to talk on the phone.
I've missed you. I've missed you for the longest time.
We missed you, too, and your name came up many times.
Yeah, I hear it. I'm always on. You know, I'm on every Saturday.
Exactly.
It's too bad you don't get royalties every time your special recipe is mentioned.
Well, I'm going to put a patent on it.
You better.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly. And then that'll control us from sharing that recipe.
Good for you. Thanks for calling in, Werner.
Hey, listen, there's one for you, Frank.
Bless your heart.
6 after 7 day is like shooting pool with a rope. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah. Where's that dump button? Now?
Yeah, exactly. No more special guests. No. When we see Warner.
That's good. All right.
Thanks
Warner,
for calling.
Okay. You know, let me take a look at a question we've had on the desk here for quite a while. An email from Cheryl Fotherby. Hi, Charlie and Frank. She says, my orchids, I only water when they're dry, just a quarter cup at a time. I fertilize with an orchid fertilizer every other watering, so about once a month. I have two orchids. The first is a smaller one, but after blooming, the stem was cut off. It has nice leaf growth, but no flowers. The roots, long, soft green stems, seem to be getting along quite long outside the flower pot, but there's no stem appearing to produce blooms. How can I get the thing to produce flowers again?
All right, Cheryl, be patient. It will. If the leaves are green and healthy, the roots sound green and healthy, be happy for those roots, because those roots growing outside the pot are doing exactly what they're supposed to do. The smaller orchid, I mean, I'm a pretty big fan of dunking orchids into a pail of room temperature water. It could even have a bit of orchid fertilizer in it as a real thorough way of thoroughly watering and then allowing that pot to drain and, you know, back into its eastern or northern window. So if you're not seeing any flowers right now, don't worry. I mean, the days are getting shorter. Many plants are naturally hunkering down for winter. One of mine just suddenly started up a flower stem the other day.
Yep.
And I haven't fertilized my orchids and I don't remember. So, the flowers will suddenly appear when you least expect it. And remember, that flower stem kind of looks like a root at first.
That's right.
Right. It comes out on this green.
Confusing.
Yeah, a green flower stem and a green root side by side. But the root has a bit of a silvery tip, a silvery outer coating, whereas a flower stem is fully green. As soon as you see that flower stem as a fully green thing, get out one of your little, you got little stakes often that come with your orchids with the little clips, the green, the wire stakes. Train that stem up, because otherwise it's just going to go horizontal.
Very good. Okay. Another email here. This from Jack Joseph. I have a question to ask you regarding, here's something right up your alley, grass planting. Mm-hmm. Earlier this summer, I had a tree replaced and bought some grass seed and topsoil to mix together, and I spread over where the tree used to be so that new grass would grow in its place, and he sent you a picture of this. I was wondering, when would be the best time to do this? In the fall, like November, when I'm done cutting the lawn and before the cold, snowy weather comes in, or early next spring? Before the warm weather arrives. In either case, would watering it daily help?
Okay, great question, Jack Joseph, because you know what? This is the time, right now, today, to get grass seed on, to patch, patch those patches. So what have we got going on for grass seed right now? We have warm soil, which you will not have in November and you will not have in April. So by taking that seed soil mixture that you've made, raking that in, getting good seed soil contact in your patchy areas or your thin areas of your lawn, ensuring that you've chosen the right grass seed as well, that it's, you know, high traffic grass seed or drought tolerant grass seed. There's many, many blends. Choose the right one. Get that seed soil contact, even very gently rake it just so everything kind of falls down between the existing grass. And you lightly rake it because the birds will take the grass seed. So just, you don't want to bury the seed too deep and get your hose out right away. Should you water it every day? Depends how much sun it's getting. You do want to keep the seed moist. Once grass seed is moistened, you want to keep it moist, which is not the same as wet, just moist. Sometimes you water it twice a day if it gets really hot and sunny, which might happen next week by the looks of the forecast. So watering, keeping it moist, you should see grass seed germination at this time of year, 7 to 10 days after planting it.
Oh, wow.
Whereas if you wait till November or April, the seed will just sit there all winter and come up in the spring.
Right.
Same with April. It'll just come up when conditions are right, and it can take up to 6 weeks in the spring. So do it now.
Okay. All righty. You've had your instructions. Away you go. We're going to have one more email here, then we'll get back to our phone lines. And the phone number, once again, 1-866-744-7740. Like it lined up, we'll have a chat with Charlie. Meantime, from Wayne in Victor, New York. He says, who stole the petunias? Hello, Charlie and Frank. I enjoy listening to your show from across the big lake where you come in loud and clear most of the time. I have wave petunias planted in a whiskey barrel on my front porch. June and July brought an abundance of blooms. In August, the flowers have all but disappeared, although the plants look healthy and green. Similar plants in pastures have all bloomed until the hard freeze. I water and remove deadheads as usual, but all I have is green plants.
Okay.
Who stole the petunias?
I know, I love it. So this is an email that I received on August 30th. So this is a couple of weeks ago. And I bet you if we had Wayne in the room right now with us, he would say, take back that email. It's not true. Because what happens, and we don't always think about it, but, you know, plants are living things, right? When it gets really cold, plants can't grow. So they hunker down, they go dormant, they wait till conditions are better. It's exactly the same when it gets really hot. They can't grow. It's too hot. So they hunker down and they wait until conditions are more optimal. With the petunias, even though petunias love the heat, that was a lot of heat. That was a lot of dry, sunny, high temperatures here in Ontario. And I can't imagine that in Victor, New York, it was any cooler than it was here in Southern Ontario. So I would assume that what happened is the petunias just said, okay, we're going to just, you know, whatever buds were on the plants when the heat wave started opened, but no new buds formed. So eventually you get green plants. Then the heat starts to dissipate, more buds form. And before you know it, you're back in business with lots of flowers. So, that's my analysis of what happened with Wayne's petunias. Nobody stole them. They just responded to the extreme temperatures. And Wayne, seriously, send me another email. Let me know if I'm wrong and that, you know, they didn't come back, but I'd be really surprised if they're not covered in blooms right now.
Alrighty. Now we're pretty exciting day for Charlie and I back in the studio live for the first time. It's almost, 6 months.
Six months plus.
Yeah. And so we're delighted to go to Hanover, Ontario, where Ayton is listening in. Good morning, Ayton.
Oh, hi. Actually, it's Barb. Name of the town is Ayton. But welcome back, Charlie and Frank. I have a friend that has a huge coleus plant, and she was wanting to keep it over. Mm-hmm. Can you leave it, like, or should you take cuttings? Or
it'll be way. Is it in a pot right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how big a pot when you say huge? Like huge plant, but how big a pot?
Oh, probably a 14-inch pot.
Right, which is a really big pot to start moving around into the house. I mean, you could do that as a backup plan, but today I would take cuttings of that coleus. So you're going to remove any flowers that are on the tips. So eliminate the flowers. Then take tip cuttings that are 4 to 6 inches long.
Okay.
And the cool thing about coleus is they do root very easily, even just in a glass of water. But you have to
Do that first.
Yeah. So the 4 to 6 inch cuttings. So those are tip stem cuttings. Clean, nice, sharp scissors, cut those off, take as many as you want, 6, 8, 10, 12 cuttings, remove the lower leaves, the leaves are opposite, so you're going to take off 4 leaves, and where the leaves come off, and you're going to be careful, you're going to use your scissors, take those leaves off, where the leaves were is where roots are going to grow from. So those like 4 little bumps that you've left on the stem need to be immersed underwater, and within a week or so you should have some roots growing. Then it's little pots with fresh potting soil and pot them up.
Oh, okay. But it like the actual plant itself would just get kind of leggy looking and that?
It's possible to bring a coleus in. However, number one, I imagine it's big and heavy to start working with, but assuming you had, you know, 7 strong men to bring that into the house, you can't make it go dormant. You need lots of sun. So you've got to provide like a patio window, a patio door. You need a bright spot. You need to try and imitate the conditions that it had all summer.
Okay.
So sun, water as necessary. Be careful to not overwater. And don't be afraid with coleus to cut it back. The more you take the tips off of a coleus plant, the bushier it gets. And the better the form, the better the shape, the better it looks. So, you can shear the whole thing as part of this bringing it in. You could cut it back as well. I would also do a soap and water wash before I bring it in to the plant and through the soil, just to try and say goodbye to the spiders and whoever might be riding on the plant as it comes into the house.
Okay. What kind of soap?
Just like real soap, not detergent. Whatever soap you can get. Could be Ivory soap, could be Safer
soap. Like
dishwashing
soap.
Just make sure it's not detergent. So read whatever you're buying. Like if you look at Palmolive, it's going to say detergent right on it. So whatever you're buying, make sure it says soap. But traditionally, Ivory is a soap. Not always. Make sure. A lot of the new green products are pure soaps, or safer soap, which is designed as an insecticidal soap.
Well, that's probably the best one to head for.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Barb?
Okay,
good luck
so
with
much.
That. You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks for joining us here on a good-looking Saturday morning here in Toronto, 19th of September. Wow, that time is ripping by. Wilma, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. It's so good to hear, be able to phone again.
Yeah.
I'm with some of those other ones. I don't have email.
There you go.
Anyway, Charlie, I have a hosta.
Uh-huh.
I want to move.
Okay.
And where it's sitting now, it seems to be very holy. There are a lot of holes in it.
Yeah.
Now, it's not, it's been there probably 2 to 3 years, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And every year it seems to get a lot of holes in it by this time of the year.
Yeah.
And where I want to move it, it will have probably some more shade than it gets now.
Mm-hmm.
But I wondered if I could do a total wash of the roots and the soil as I move it.
You don't need to do that, Wilma. Okay, the hosta that you are looking to move, is it a green and white hosta?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's almost to the gold color.
Oh, nice. Okay, so as I'm sure you know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different kinds of hostas out there.
Yes.
Some
yes,
are more
yes.
edible than others. The thinner the leaves, the more edible the hosta. And the one you probably have is probably something called Albo marginata. And it is particularly tasty. Slugs and snails will take little bites out of it. So it ends up looking like Swiss cheese, really.
Yes.
And this has been a dry year. So this has been a year where we've had the population of slugs and snails is very low compared to some of our more moist years.
Mm-hmm.
So, two things I would suggest. One is, if you love that hosta enough and you still want to keep it, then cut the leaves off, prepare where you're going, make sure you're putting it into a well-drained but really fertile soil. Get some composted manure. Make sure it's a quality soil, not some old, tired, dusty stuff that's called soil. Make sure it's a good, fertile, well-drained spot. You're going to dig up that hosta, pop it into its new home, water it thoroughly, and next spring and every sort of rainfall from now on, you're going to go out after the rain and you're going to sprinkle something called slug and snail pellets around that hosta, and that will eliminate those pests from eating the plant. Or compost through your current hosta, get a new hosta and get one that's got a much thicker leaf and a much less edible leaf, and you won't have the holes.
Okay. Well, and that's it. I have just transplanted. I have bought very few of my hostas, actually.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
were here when we came here. And I've just split them up and moved them
yeah,
around.
Good, yeah.
And I know that some of them are fine, mm-hmm. don't have any holes, mm-hmm. and the next one will be half-eaten type
exactly.
thing.
Exactly, so, and that's what you learn, with having many like that.
Yeah. So what did you call that?
There is, it's called slug and snail bait.
Slug and snail.
Bait, so B-A-I-T. And that is made by Scott's. They are little pellets. Follow the instructions. The nice thing about these pellets is that they will not harm anything but mollusks. And mollusks are your slugs and snails. So they eat them. They think they're pretty yummy. And then it is a stomach poison and they don't die immediately. They will trail off, with their little slimy trail off into some corner of your garden and die, so you'll never see their dead bodies. So it's a quite effective stomach poison for slugs
good
and snails.
Product. Yeah,
I could have had some in my bathroom last night then, because I had brought my hostas in a couple days ago, and last night I went into the bathroom and there are two lovely, good growth size snails crawling across the top of the bathtub
that
had come out of the hostas.
There you go.
You paint quite a picture there.
Yeah, so you just threw them outside,
well,
I assume.
It startled me when I first saw them. Where did those grubs come?
Well, thank you very much, Wilma. Good luck with all of that.
Yeah, you got pet snails. You know,
yes,
you know.
Yes,
well,
yes.
You can train them.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Enjoy your show.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us. And with that in mind, I look up and, you know, our call board is almost bare. So we've got emails we're going to be dealing with as well. But this would be a perfect time if you've been trying to reach Charlie. But over these last 6 months, of course, we haven't been here to take phone calls. Obviously, folks are not used to that. And we'd want to have you get to that phone and give Charlie a call with your questions regarding. Here's the number again, 1-866-740-4740. That's 1-866-740-4740. And if you want to send Charlie an email, by all means, for possibly next week, it's c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. And we'll be back in just a moment to deal with an email from Jonathan Stein. A really nice note that Jonathan sent us. Back in just a moment.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okie dokie, here we go to an email, then we'll get back to those phone lines here on Zoomer Radio. Mm-hmm. This from Jonathan Stein. Hi, Charlie and Frank. Thank you both for an incredibly entertaining and informative show. Well, isn't that nice? Yeah. He says, I've learned so much from you, Charlie. I have a question about my jade plant. I live in Zone 6 in the suburb of Boston, Massachusetts. My jade plant that I have now for about 13 years spends the summer on my sunny deck and the winter in the kitchen by a sliding door. The plant's in an azalea pot measuring about 12 inches wide and 8 inches high. The plant is about 3 feet in width and 3 feet from the top of the soil line to the bottom of the plant. It's big, in other words. The plant has done very well over the years and flowers beautifully for me every fall. Usually by this time of year, the jade plant has filled in quite a bit, but this year there is some new growth, but it looks a bit thin. I know jade plants like to be pot-bound, but I'm wondering if it needs to be repotted into a larger pot. Last time I repotted the plant was 4 to 5 years ago. If it needs to be repotted, what size pot would you recommend? From Jonathan Stein.
Great question. And boy, Jonathan sounds like quite the good jade plant grower.
I'll tell you.
Not everybody can get a jade plant to flower, particularly annually.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it really needs the right conditions. It needs the right watering, the right nutrients, the right amount of sun to flower. So good for you. So Jonathan, you're right. I mean, we do often leave jade plants pot bound because by keeping a plant in a pot that's really got full of roots and not a lot of soil, two things happen. One is we rarely will have waterlogged soil because there's not that much soil to waterlog. And number two, it keeps the plant smaller. So it's a way of dwarfing our plants is keeping them in pots that are full of roots. And with a jade plant, you're never going to be in a situation where you've killed the plant from lack of water. It's more likely the opposite. What I would do though, because every 4 to 5 years is as long as you would want to go between repottings. So I would repot that plant. I personally would go into a terracotta pot or a pot that has extremely good drainage. What I love about the terracotta, of course, is you've got all that ability for moisture to be evaporated off the sides of the pot. So, and they're very bottom heavy. Jades tend to be very top heavy with all that growth and little root systems. So it just helps keep them very stable to have them in a heavy pot. So terracotta pot with obviously drainage holes in the bottom. I always put rocks over those drainage holes because they're big holes and your soil is going to go out the holes. Now with your soil, you're going to choose a regular grower's mix or a, you know, regular soil. Soilless potting soil for a jade could work, but I'd be inclined to up your ante a bit with the drainage. So I'd be inclined to add some sand or buy cactus soil if you can find such a thing in your stores. Even adding something like perlite to a regular all-purpose potting mix will help with drainage. So you just want to make sure you've got really good drainage, even a grit. Like there's certain ways to kind of get that really supreme drainage. Do the repotting. And of course, when you take the the plant out of its current pot, ensure that you do loosen the roots if they're all in a spiral inside and the shape of the azalea pot you're currently in, because you want to get them out of that shape, mm-hmm. get them growing out of the spiral they might be in. And once you've got it potted up, the experts say that you normally when we repot or plant anything, we water right away. But with jades, the idea is wait a week before you do that first watering. So you're going to go into a moist soil. You always moisten these dry, dry soils, but don't water right away. So let it settle in for a week or so and then give it a thorough watering and keep up all the conditions you've been giving it, because it should be flowering like, you know, just as it has in the past by this time next year.
Very good. Okay. On the line is June from Toronto. Good morning, June. Welcome to the show. Hi, June.
June, are you there?
Are you there? No.
Oh, I heard a click.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, let's take the next caller in line.
Oh, there she is.
Oh, wait a minute.
Hi, June.
Hi, dear. How are you? Welcome back, both of you.
Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's going on?
Well, you mean apart from squirrels?
Squirrels in Toronto.
I have a load of black walnut trees.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Wonderful things. Obviously brought in by my four-legged friends. I have one tree that has grown like a maniac this summer. I have to get rid of it. It's absolutely loaded.
Oh, wow.
But the roots are going in to my septic bed.
Oh. And you're in Toronto with a septic bed?
No, I'm in Dunville.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, Dunville. Okay, we have Toronto down there for some reason.
Right. So you definitely need to deal with that. You do not want any tree roots getting into your septic bed, because nothing slows down a septic bed and causes all kinds of expensive construction and excavation issues in the future than trees with roots.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
the roots grow where the moisture is, right? They're going to find the moisture. So
Weeping willow is another example.
Oh, yeah. We'll never want those anywhere near your septic. So that's...
No, they're not built. Believe you me.
Yeah. What I would be doing in your area... Now, I don't... Off the top of my head, nobody's coming to mind. Do you have access to a computer? Or do you... Like, you probably know people in the neighborhood.
Yes,
Dunville's not that big a place.
Neighbor.
Just ask your neighbors if anybody can recommend... If you want to take the trees right out and it's really just a cut down the walnuts, then it's just a person with a chainsaw is what you need.
Oh, okay.
If it's more a case of, I need one or two taken out, but I need a couple of the other ones either thinned or pruned or shaped. Because, you know, a black walnut is a beautiful tree.
Because they seem to have gone up. Wait, we haven't had any rain this year, uh-huh. by the way. Very, very little.
Uh-huh.
We're on the north shore of Lake Erie. And not only did they plant one, two, three, four.
The squirrels,
oh,
eh?
Oh, the little devils.
Yes. Well, they are definitely from the squirrels.
But they weren't really trying to give you trees. They were putting away food for the winter, and then they couldn't remember where they put it.
I don't want their food.
So you know what? You have to be sharp in the spring. Because remember, they would have buried those walnuts not this year, but last year or the year before or the year before. Like this is something where they're burying in September, October. And then not finding. So you're going to have to watch in the spring for anything coming up in your lawn or places you don't want walnuts. Very distinctive leaves. Like you'll definitely recognize what they are and pull them out when they're young so you don't have to get a chainsaw to bring them out.
Thank you very much, June. We kind of have to move along.
Yeah.
We're coming up to our final segment, but bless your heart for calling
in. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Here on a Saturday morning, the 19th of September, it's the Garden Show on the air live for the first time to take phone calls in 6 months. So it's delightful to touch bases with the folks. We'll be back to say hi to Patricia in just moments here on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie, we're going to say hi now to Patricia calling into The Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning. It's so good to hear both of you, your voices again on the radio.
Thank you.
I just have a quick question with regards to nematode application. Is it too late to apply it now. I know that you normally suggest the month of August to do that.
No, because if you have grubs in your lawn, which would be a little bit bigger now in September than they would have been, say, in mid-August, then these nematodes will still work.
Oh, will they?
But keep in mind that the super dry, hot summer we just had may have postponed the egg hatching of the grubs in the first place, so that they might, it might be optimal now.
Yeah,
we never really know. I mean, truly, truly optimal time to apply nematodes is, number one, when you've started to see some damage or you're quite confident you do have grubs in your lawn, and the soil is nice and moist. So the moisture problem is going to be your biggest one. You're going to need to water your lawn or wherever you're planning to apply the nematodes very thoroughly in advance. So it's a nice moist soil, because the nematodes need water to travel between the particles of the soil to get down to where the grubs are.
Okay, so you apply water before you put the nematode process, and then you water after
again,
as well.
Exactly. So, you know, I'd give, if, say, you said to yourself, I want to apply my nematodes tomorrow, then I'd be putting a sprinkler or some water in the area where you need to get the nematodes applied for, you know, it's like a slow, like a sprinkler's nice because it's kind of a slow water. Roughly, it's about an inch of water you want to get out on that area. An empty tuna fish can, the sprinkler, and just monitor the water filling up in the can till you've got about an inch. 12 hours later, so again, wait for gravity, wait for percolation of moisture down. So the next morning, afternoon, get your nematodes going.
Oh, so you can do it the day before.
Water, yes.
Oh, okay.
Better to do it the day before. You'll get better, more thorough saturation of the soil if it's got hours to for the water to move.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. Yeah, yeah, good luck with that. It's, yeah, I haven't heard a lot about grub issues with the emails we've been getting, but, you know, they're always there. The June beetles were way out of control this summer, so there's got to be lots of baby grubs, baby June beetles.
Yeah, well, there's little holes in my back lawn where somebody's been having a little midnight feast, I think.
So birds will do it. Like, birds will pull them out, and skunks and raccoons tend to make a bit of a mess, but they'll definitely pull them out too.
Well, thanks, Patricia.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks for calling.
Have a good weekend, and thank you for joining us here on The Garden Show.
One more email. What do you think?
All right, yeah. MJ Harnack, subject, where are the monarchs? To answer your listener's query as to where are the monarchs, they're at my place. The picture that sent along shows monarchs on my zinnias, which are next to the butterfly bush, which is out of frame. I have tons of monarchs this year, having appeared in the, past few weeks since the butterfly bush bloomed. I'm guessing these are the last generation in season that are bulking up before they pack their sacks and head to Mexico. Haven't seen this many in years. I've had that butterfly bush for many years, however, which is different this year, that I planted a host of zinnia and bee balm that I started from seed I'd harvested from last year. Now, the bee balm are constantly swarming with all manner of different species of bees, but the monarchs don't land in them, I believe because they aren't a big enough landing pad for them. However, I wonder if the monarchs follow the bees. Perhaps the insects have their own form of internet. I also have a lot of milkweed, but have never seen the monarch eggs on them. They're far from these zinnias, however, so I've planted some closer, hoping I'll have some to observe with my grandkids next year. Love your show, including your opening music song. Good stuff. Thank you, MJ.
Yeah, thank you, MJ, and thanks for that update. And, you know, she mentioned some really good plants for attracting both bees and butterflies. So pollinators in general, that is a trend. We're doing everything in our power in our gardens to support the pollinator population right from early spring, right through till late fall. And we never really know what month that is, right? Every season's a new season. So bee balm, proper name is Monarda. Of course, butterfly bush, proper name is Buddleii. Zinnias, we all know and love our zinnias and annual flowers that bloom all summer. And she's right about butterflies like a landing pad. They like a solid flower faced up to the sun, and they can come in and just land on it and then use their little tongues to get some of the nectar out of those plants. So good for you. Good choices. And yeah, I hope indeed this all works great for the grandkids next year.
Exactly. We've just got a little bit of time left here to chat, but I wanted to find out how things are going on the new property there in Prince Edward County. You've sent me some videos, actually, of the huge earth-moving machines pushing stuff around. Boy, oh boy.
I know.
I've done the number.
Yeah. So follow me on Instagram. I have been shooting all kinds of videos that are going up there. So charlie.dobbin on Instagram. And yeah, so the latest update, of course, last time we talked, the trees had all gone in. I was still working on my gardens that are my foundation gardens up against the house. So front, side, and back. I've got two of them, two out of three planted. The third one, the plants are, I'm still fiddling before I know where they're going to get planted. And yeah, it's a, lawn is in, seeds have been planted, praying for rain. So I'm going home to work on my rain dance.
All right. Well, it's been a delight, Charlie, seeing you again. And
it's been great. Look at you in pink. Come on. You look great in pink. You got to wear that more often.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Because, you know, when we were on the phone, I never knew which we're wearing.
Exactly. Yeah. Mostly my PJs, I think.
I was going to say, missing my sweatpants already.
Thanks, Carlos.
Thanks, Carlos. And thanks to Joel. We couldn't have done the last 6 months without Joel's support. So a big shout out to him. Thanks, Frank. Nice to see you. And
Good to see you, and hear
our callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.